also speak with caution on this topic because, as my wife likes to say, we still have corn standing in the field. And I think when they're 60, we'll still say that. But, and speaking of my wife, we are both asked to speak on this topic. And so I thought for her birthday this year, well, I'm going to give you the gift of time. I had in mind that I would take her to a resort on the island, Tofino, out on the west coast, and we would take time with, you know, with the beach and with nature and with a nice resort and with our Bibles and meditation and prayer and mutual communion, and we'd prepare for this conference. And her thought on preparing for the conference was, I need to go to a mall. I need to have something to wear. And so we went instead to that famous resort of Bellingham, Washington. And we ended up, I had to endure shopping to prepare for this. And I also, we took her bowling, and I also had to endure humiliation because she cleaned my clock. So, now I do want to make something emphatically clear about what I have to say. If you adopt anything of what I preach to you today for your own philosophy, for your own teaching on the subject, for your own use in your own home, I hope that you will do so not because it worked for me. I adopted the philosophy I have for child rearing and for being a dad because of what I saw in the scriptures. And it is the Bible that must convince us, not pragmatism. Now, I'm going to give you this, and I hope that what I have to say is very faithful, and the hope that what I have adopted in my life truly does come from the Lord. I'm just working my way through Romans in our morning services and just preached on Romans 3:23 last Sunday. I'm convinced and convicted by the verse, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And that's a present tense, are coming short. And that all, in that verse, which we pull right out of its context, is speaking about believing people. All believing people sinned. And all are coming short. That's what makes the righteousness from God so glorious. But that's another sermon. But anyway, our text is Ephesians 6:4. Very well-known passage, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, I've given my message this title, Disciplined Admonition. Disciplined Admonition. I am going to talk in this message about a subject which I could sum up with two slogans I've acquired over the years that I've used to describe my philosophy of biblical child rearing. The first one is, this is not Bible, by the way. We'll get to the Bible in just a second. The first one is, never negotiate with terrorists. And that is, I often see that happening in the grocery store. Second one is shock and awe. I believe in shock and awe. My father was a fine Christian businessman. But he knew how to shock and awe. He could look at me, and it was history. Whatever thought I had in my mind, it was history. Now, obviously, my comments here, I tend to be a smart aleck, and they are a bit smart alecky. But seriously, I do want... In our home, I want it in our home, and I want in the children of our church, our little children, to grow up to be people who love the Lord and are willing to commit their whole lives to serving Him. Recently, Hudson Taylor's great-grandson died. I don't know if you saw that in the news. He died on March 20th. Great-grandson, a missionary. Now, you think back. If you know the biography of Hudson Taylor, I didn't check this. I meant to, but I believe it was Hudson Taylor's grandfather that was saved in the Wesleyan revivals, a Methodist. And then that man had a son, and that man had a son named Hudson Taylor, and all of these are Christians right through the line. Now we have Hudson Taylor's son and his grandson and his great-grandson, and sons yet following. That's over six generations of Christians. That's what we want. It's so heartbreaking to see young people reared in Christian homes who throw off the mantle. We don't want to see that in any of our children or any of our grandchildren. And oh, what a heartache it is when we see it happen. My proposition for this message is the mission of Christian parents is the faithful administration of the Lord's disciplined admonition to their children. The mission of Christian parents is the faithful administration of the Lord's disciplined admonition to their children. The first thing I'd like to draw your attention to is that first phrase. Now, we will not take a lot of time here. In spite of the way I introduce myself and the statements that I like to use, it says here, "You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath." And I think that we all agree with this notion. It is a grievous sin to do something to provoke one of the Lord's little ones to wrath, to exasperate them in such a way as by our heavy-handedness, by our self-centeredness, by our hypocrisy, by our unwillingness to give them time, whatever it might be, to provoke them to wrath. To such a wrath that they will turn away from parents and hate their parents and hate all that their parents stood for and hate the God of their parents. It's a grievous sin. I don't plan to dwell on this point because really, I think much more needs to be said today on some of my other points. However, I am quite ready in my ministry to deal with people who abuse their children, to turn them into those who are in authority if need be. There are things that men and women cannot do in their homes, and there are wicked sins committed against children. And certainly we turn away and we eschew all of that. With respect to not provoking, one of the things that I had to learn early in my ministry was that when I'm tired on Sunday morning going to church, I need to guard my mouth. In the early days of our ministry, I was working 40 hours plus a week in the secular workforce. We were holding a Bible study on Saturday nights in our home, and then I would stay up and write the sermon for Sunday morning, and we would go to church with little children who were being little children, which is to say they were aggravating me a great deal. And I was tired, and I found myself often yelling at my kids all the way to church. And it dawned on me that was my tiredness being exasperated with their childishness, and I needed to stop. And so it was a lot more fun to go to church after that. Another factor in not provoking children, discipline must be for them and not for me. Many people discipline their kids to get them to quit bugging them. As long as the atmosphere is quiet and I can do what I want to do, watch television, my sports, whatever it might be, play with my computer, cook with my barbecue, whatever it is I want to do, as long as my kids are not bugging me, then everything's fine. But if they bug me, I'll smack them around until they quit bugging me. Well, I think that's provoking to wrath. Another way that people will discipline is because they want to discipline a kid because the kid embarrasses me. You know, makes me look bad in public. And that's why we discipline. Because it's about me? I don't think so. It's got to be about them. It's got to be not about my convenience. but about their benefit. That's the manner of disciplined admonition, what I'm calling disciplined admonition, not provoking. And there is a great deal said about this in the literature on child rearing, in sermons that you hear in child rearing. In fact, I think, the pendulum has generally swung very much in that direction. I read recently an article where someone was interpreting this very verse. And this fellow is, I won't tell you who he is, you may know him, he's a fundamentalist. But he's taking this verse, and I thought that he made a serious error as he turned from one side of the verse to the other. And he took one side and made it say the same as the other side. I think what we have here in this verse are two sides of one coin. And one side is to prevent the abuse of the second side. But I do think we need to have the courage of the second side in child rearing. I've given the title Disciplined Admonition, and I'd like to explain to you what I mean by that. Disciplined admonition. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but, very strong adversative here. There's two different ways of saying but in Greek, and this is the one that is strong. But, turn our thoughts around. Obviously, we all agree, do not provoke your children to wrath, but, bring them up. Right? Don't provoke them to wrath, but bring them up to maturity. Feed them into maturity. It's the word that comes right from the verb that means to feed. Raise them up to maturity. But how do we do that? Well, we're in, he says, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So what we have first is a negative command in this verse. Provoke not. The strong adversative, but a positive command. Bring them up. And then a qualifying phrase, prepositional phrase, beginning with the word in. And this describes the sphere in which Christian parents should bring their children up. The sphere of child rearing. This is the atmosphere. This is the direction. This is the methodology. In the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Now, I've said discipline here. I guess we need to talk about these words. The components of child rearing. Discipline and admonition. The King James Version here, as we've read it, and as we've memorized, says, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, I don't know exactly what this word nurture meant in the time that the translators translated it. In fact, I was looking in my Bible works and I noticed that this goes all the way back to Tyndale at least. Tyndale's version uses nurture. It comes from Tyndale at least. Maybe further. I didn't check Wycliffe. I don't have him. So, but it goes back a long way. I don't know what it meant in that time. I think it's a badly misunderstood word. It's badly misunderstood due to cultural pressure. We live in a time when words of discipline and discipleship and authority are words that are not very popular and they're not well received. We live in a time where I believe we do in the church to evangelical compromise. You see, my contending for the faith will creep in. But due to evangelical compromise, we live in a feminized culture in the church. I believe that culture has worked an evil influence all over the church, including the fundamentalist church. Whatever that is, but I believe it has. We have two contrasting words here. Word that we gain from the King James, and then the word that I'm using, discipline. Now, nurture, in our connotation, in English today, nurture has a soft connotation, nourishment, development. And certainly, that's what you want to do with children. You want to nourish them along and develop them. But is it what the word means here in the Bible? Is that indeed the connotation that we are to gather? The word discipline has a hard connotation. Restriction is included. Punishment is included. Direction. Authority. All of these ideas that are very, very unpopular today. The Greek word is the word paideia. Paideia, instruction. Did some reading in Kittle's very lengthy article on the word paideia. It's a word that's very much used in the Greek culture, so it has a great history in the Greek culture. And I believe that one of the reasons that this word is misunderstood today is because in large measure we have adopted a Greek understanding of this word. And by that I mean a secular Greek first century understanding of this word. The Greek concept is the idea of the training of the whole man. That had to do with the education of the whole man. It had to do with his political education. Teaching the child, the young man, to grow up to be a citizen of the polis, of the city. To be a free man. A man who is a man about town, who is about affairs, who knows how to conduct himself and to function successfully in the society of the day. It has to do with the education of the man socially as well as physically. The Greeks made great emphasis on the gymnasium and training the body and all of these matters. This quote indeed comes from Kittle's article on the word. He says, "Paideia denotes the upbringing and handling of the child, which is growing up to maturity and which thus needs direction, teaching, instruction, and a certain measure of compulsion in the form of discipline or even chastisement. Paideia is both the way of education and cultivation which has to be traversed and also the goal which is to be attained." That's how they sum up this word in the Greek culture. For the Greeks, instruction is first of all a family responsibility, and I think this is something that comes actually from general revelation, because the family is God's idea. Going right, the very first institution God created is the family. And so I think this is natural to understand this. It is the family responsibility. It does demand from those who are giving the instruction, it demands good character. It demands that they be successful people in terms of conducting themselves as citizens of the city. It is intended, this instruction is intended to form the life for usefulness, to make a good functioning citizen. And this word, the Greek culture, I think, has come to inform this word in modern and even Christian circles as well. And there is some value, certainly, to this concept. We do want our kids to be able to function in the world at large. There are jokes made about homeschoolers and their children, and people will say to us, well, when they find out that we homeschool, they will say, well, what about socialization? And my answer is always, I have a smart aleck answer. I don't want them to be socialists. So I'm not worried about their socialization. I also, when we were talking about this, Debbie and I preparing for this, I said, socialization. I said, they talk about dogs and socialization. Our dog, when he goes out on the path to do his thing, he meets other dogs and he is not very well socialized, they say. He doesn't greet other dogs very well. And so they talk about socializing dogs. I said, what are children? Are they dogs? I mean, come on. What is this? Well, anyway, that's my pet peeve, I guess. But I want to say something here about all this Greek concept of education. The Greek culture is not biblical usage. What a word means in the Bible can be informed by what it meant in the secular world, but what it means in the Bible is far more informed by how it's used in the Bible. And it's what the Bible says that we are most concerned with. So how is this word used in the Bible? Now, we have a noun here in this verse. Paideia and paiduo is the verb. The noun occurs only six times in the New Testament. but the verb occurs many more times. Both occur in the Old Testament. The usage in the Old Testament and the New Testament is very consistent. In the Old Testament, what we find is not so much this Greek concept of discipline, but what we find is that the law is the instructor that will hem the man in and discipline him for godliness. Now, of course, we are not under the law. We know that. We go to the New Testament and we look for usage in the New Testament to understand it. And what is amazing to see, if you will take the time to do the study, almost every reference in the New Testament using these words are words that speak about discipline. The most famous, of course, is Hebrews chapter 12, where there are, I think, four of the six times paideia is used, is Hebrews chapter 12, which says, despise not the chastening of the Lord. The sharp discipline of the Lord. It's also used, the other use is 2 Timothy 3:16, where it says, instruction in righteousness. The Bible is profitable for instruction in righteousness. Now, the commentaries say that that could be one exception in the New Testament where the word is used to speak of the whole man being educated. But I think that the Scriptures could be seen to be a chastiser of our minds and thoughts as well. I've been chastised this morning. Meekness. Right? Speaking the truth in love. That Scripture chastises me. See? But perhaps the most prominent illustration for our understanding of this word, I'd like you to turn over to Luke 23. And if you'll forgive me, I'm actually going to quote a very rare version I found of this. Luke 23. And we have here the trial of our Lord Jesus before Pilate. And we're going to begin in verse 14. I guess verse 13 is the paragraph. Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, said unto them, ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I have examined him before you and have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof you accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is found in him. Now here's my alternate version. I will therefore nurture him and let him go. I call that alternate version the touchy-feely, uber-sensitive, ultra-modern version. That is TFUSUMV for short. As a footnote, marginal reading, I will therefore educate the whole man and let him go. Is that what it means? I also dug up the Redneck Bundy version, the RFV. It goes this way. I'll learn him one and let him go. You see? And I think that's what it means. Discipline. The National Post, a newspaper we have in Canada that alleges that it's a national newspaper, there's an article that appeared recently. I was quite surprised to see this. It was entitled, Doing the Right Thing. It was about raising moral children. And they have this comment. I thought it was quite startling. Those who study and write about morality. Now, this is a totally secular viewpoint. I want you to understand where these people are coming from. Those who study and write about morality say there are some common elements present when morality sticks. Religion or some code that substitutes for it. Religion or some code that substitutes for it. Parents who not only teach morality, but show it by example, and most interestingly, a belief by parents that their children will not become good on their own. That's an amazing insight for somebody in the secular world, don't you think? Now, the second word here in our verse, back in Ephesians 6, nurture, discipline, and admonition. This is the word nuthesia. It means literally to put in the mind. To put in the mind. It is not merely, forgive me for using Greek words. They're taught us not to do that, Dr. Bob. But I'm using them amongst preachers mostly, so I'm hoping that you'll forgive me. But it's not merely the word didaskein. Didaskein, didaskalos, to teach means to pass on facts, to give the teaching, which is a part of education to be sure, but this admonition is a much more impassioned and direct word to put into the mind, to have an effect on the will and disposition, presupposing opposition to be overcome. Discipline and admonition. This word, admonition, seeks to correct the mind, to put right what is wrong, to improve the spiritual attitude. It is not merely the imparting of facts, but it is the effecting of change. So that the young person, in this case, or whoever you're teaching, will truly adopt what is being taught for himself. Now, the words need to be put into combination. They're not just standing there as separate sentinels, but they need to be put into combination. One commentary, Lang's commentary, says the former consists in work, discipline, consists in work, the latter in word, nuthesia, admonition. The former is discipline, not merely punishment, and I do think we should stress that, not merely punishment. Discipline is not merely punishment. But also strict ordering of the household, accustoming it to self-denial, serviceableness, confession of faults without shuffling. And he cites several different passages here. The latter, nuthesia, comprises earnest warning and kind exhortation, which evidently predominates over serious rebukes. It is important that the former, discipline, comes first, and this last. Earnest warning. Kind exhortation. Putting in the mind. One other feature of these two words used in this combination, according to one resource I read, now I'm assuming this is so, not the greatest Greek scholar there ever lived, but I'm assuming that this is so, but they're calling this a particular kind of usage where you take one concept and you teach it with two words. There's a very fancy name for that, and if you see me afterwards, I can tell you what it is. But for example, when you say nice and warm, what you mean is it's nicely warm. So here, when you say discipline and admonition, what you mean is disciplined admonition. So it is one concept here. It is not a matter of playing one against the other, but really this is what we're after. This is the sphere in which we're to bring up our children. Now, I should give you some applications here of what I mean by that. My wife and I were married a little bit older than some. That was partly due to unattractiveness in myself and resistance on the part of my wife. She had many suitors, and most of them took no for an answer until I came along and just wouldn't go away. They sang this song at the Wilds called "The Cat Came Back." Well, that became our theme song. All right. Now, we had seen, as growing up, we were married. I was 26 and she was 28. We were married, so that's a little bit older than some. But we had seen bratty kids in our time. Related by blood to some of them. We made up our mind that we were not going to have those. God helping us. And so we're determined to tolerate no opposition from early on. You see, we have a philosophy that I'm the dad and she's the mom and they're the kids and we're not buddies. Now, some people think we're insane when we say that. But God didn't call me to be their friend. Now, I say that in a certain sense. Obviously, we get along with our kids. And it's great now that they are young adults and we can actually have wonderful conversations. Sitting there with my son, my oldest son, on the phone Monday afternoon, and we were going on about different books. He's taking the MDiv at Bob Jones, and we were going on about books he's reading and books I'm reading, and it was pure, unadulterated joy. And even though I call him buddy, I'm still the dad. And that's what we need to be. We taught them individual responsibilities. My wife, the way I talk, you'd think my wife is much stronger than I am. I was the good cop. She's the bad cop. She had a job list for these little kids. They had a little 3x5 cards. You dust this room. You straighten up this. And they would go when it was cleaning day. They had to do their jobs. And there was an inspector to make certain the jobs were done. And if they weren't done well enough, they were done again. As little kids do, go play. We have a room we call the playroom. It's still the playroom, though. There's no playing going on in there anymore. And toys would be, you walk in the room, it's like nuclear war. And at the end of the day, before they went to bed, every night, this is a ritual. All right, you got to pick up the toys. Send them down and pick up the toys. We go down, of course. But what happened? They start playing with the toys. So, disciplined admonition. Go down there. My wife or myself would have the weapon of choice in our hand. Pick up that one. Pick up that one. And if they didn't move, discipline was administered. Now, you don't have to adopt every one of our practices. But you do have to be dads and moms. And you have to teach them to do what they need to do. We also insisted that they have personal devotions. Now, and checked up on them. Now, we occasionally had family devotions. I know some fellows will preach about that very strongly, and I think it's a good thing. But it's far more important for them as individuals to have a personal relationship with God than to have a family relationship with God, I believe. And so Bible readings, as they grow older, begin to be able to read Bible reading schedules for themselves. And have you read your Bible? And little journals within their capacity. Obviously, every child is different. Not all have the same ability to communicate verbally and so on and so on. But, you know, Bible reading, but reading them Bible stories real early, faithfully, all of these things. Teaching them confession and forgiveness. There was this phrase that they were taught to say, I was wrong when I named the sin. Will you forgive me? That's when they were fighting between one another. We have this tape. It's a Bible story tape. And the little children love to listen to it. And this is the story. This is the story. It's so perfect. It's the story of the stoning of Stephen. And they were messing around. They had the tape going. And one of the kids pressed record by accident. And suddenly you hear this. Drag Stephen out of the city to stone him. And suddenly you hear this blood-curdling scream. And then you hear this little sweet voice that will be played at somebody's wedding. I'm gonna kill you and chop your head off. And of course, there's a whole thing that ensues as a result of that. But you see, you take that child and say, I was wrong when I said those things to you. Will you forgive me? Confession and forgiveness. Along the way, I picked up something. This is actually Dr. Ed Dobson had a book. that he put out called What the Bible Really Says About Marriage, Divorce, and Remarriage. And he has gone quite flaky this last year. He's very strange. You may have heard of him as the fellow who's living a year like Jesus and voted for Obama and all this business. But he has this book, and in this book, he had a question or a section about rearing children. And I found this very excellent thing. I found it so helpful. I began to use it with my own children. 5 questions for discipline. Child is caught doing something wrong. All right, so now it's time for discipline. So number 1 question, what did you do? What did you do? You tell me, what did you do? 2nd question, was it right or wrong? Was it right or wrong? See, we're taking them through a judicial process here. What we're trying to do, or what I was trying to do, is to get them to pass judgment on themselves. Number 3, this is a big one for them. What do you think I should do about it? Now, almost every time, their answer is, you know, the dread of all dreads, the ultimate punishment that could come upon them, which is the S word, of course. That doesn't always apply. We're not always going to deal with them physically. Maybe I don't have to do that this time. But what do you think I should do about it? Number 3. What else could you have done? And then, what will you do next time? To get them to think about themselves as sinners and what they need to do about it. We wanted our children to be confronted with their sin nature and to discern self and sinfulness. Now, there's something else in this verse. I haven't got to it yet. If you'll notice, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture, the discipline and admonition. Notice this last phrase, of the Lord. Of the Lord. Now what this is either a subjective genitive or a genitive of source. What it means is that the disciplined admonition comes from the Lord. It's the Lord's disciplined admonition. Everything you do in discipline and admonition must be from the Lord. You must be a disciplined and admonished disciple yourself. You really need to know the Word. You need to live the Word. You honor the Lord with your life and your time. How can you expect your kids to do something differently from you? Right now in Canada, if you go up there, you're going to see symptoms of our national madness. The hockey playoffs have started. And people are running around, especially now Vancouver's in. I have names for them, but anyway. And so they're running around with flags flying from their cars for the Canucks. And many people will park themselves. This is the month they joke about it. Men abandon their families, park themselves in front of the television. Nowadays you can watch, I think right now in the first round of the playoffs, it's like 3 or 4 games a day on TV. And in Canada, you probably don't understand this. You have a thing that I call a non-sport, basketball. And maybe that is similar. But in Canada, we are consumed with it. But what dictates your schedule? What dominates your mind? Is it knowing God? When I was a young man, I was a sports nut. I knew all the players on the Montreal Expos. That tells you how far. I knew the lineup. I remember going to the Atlanta Fulton County Stadium as much as I could when the Expos were in town. I remember one game when they won it with a grand slam home run in the bottom of the 7th or something. It was tremendous. The expos, I mean, won it. I have a missionary friend. We were in a missions conference one day, and as we were one time in Denver, and as we were leaving, he shook my hand and he says, "Don," he says, "I'm going to pray for you." "Oh, good." I says, "I'm going to pray that you lose your passion for sports." I thought, "Is it that bad?" I didn't feel. Well, I have. My wife says, "Well, you just replaced it for the computer." But anyway. But listen, what dictates your time? The Lord's disciplined admonition. Now, I want to say something else about the Lord's discipline being short-circuited. The Lord's discipline. And this is one thing that I think is really an issue in our circles. I think it's... I don't know exactly how we counteract it entirely. I think we have to do this individually. We have to do it as pastors. But something that I call delayed infant baptism. Delayed infant baptism. We have these little ones in our Sunday school and in our homes, and we're very anxious for their salvation. Truly we are. Our Sunday school teachers are anxious. We want these little ones to understand and believe. And as you know, I'm sure you've heard others teach, that it's very easy to take these very little ones and lead them into a profession without a possession. They'll say something to please you. They'll pray a prayer to please you. I believe that children can be saved at a very young age. I believe I count my salvation from the age of 5. My father used to take me and read Bible stories to me 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and supper. He used the Egermeyer's Bible storybook, which is, especially if you can get the older versions, is an excellent Bible storybook. I highly recommend. He used that Bible storybook, and I can remember at one point when I was a little boy getting to a place where I would start, my parents tell me, I was requesting that they read to me the story of the crucifixion. And as they read the story of the crucifixion to me, I would burst into tears and weep and ask, why did they do that to him? I've been taught to love Jesus. Why did they do that to him? And my dad would go time after time after time explaining to me that they did that to him because all men are sinners and you're a sinner. And that he died for your sins. And, oh, I didn't want him to die. So I didn't understand. And I would keep asking for the story. And I would cry and Dad would go through the drill and say the same thing over and over again. And my mother would say, well, why do you keep reading it to him? Well, I kept asking for it. That's why. Finally, my dad said, one night I seemed to understand. I vividly remember this night when I was lying in my bed and the light from the hallway was streaming into my room and my dad was kneeling beside me and led me in prayer. And the light of the gospel came into my heart. So I believe children can be saved at a very young age. But I think they are also very easily led to please us and to say things to please us. And then what do? Dunk 'em. We're Baptists. And we tell them that they are converted. And we think our job is done. I think it's better, this is part of our philosophy, to do everything you can to let the Lord work and the child respond. Our little ones, when they would come to us at night, often in nighttime prayer, say, Daddy, I want to get saved. What we decided to do is say, all right, you talk to us about that in the morning. They hear the language of being saved at church all the time. They hear it from their parents. They hear it from their Sunday school teachers. I wanted them to be taking the initiative. And finally, one by one, there was a time when one of them would come to us in the morning and say, Daddy, I want to talk to you about getting saved. Eventually they did. And later they wanted to be baptized. This is probably one of the hardest things that I ever had to do with my own children was to determine whether or not I should baptize them. Do they really exhibit the fruit of a changed life? With the children of our church, I've established a policy. Those parents will come to me, well, so-and-so wants to be baptized. They've been saved. Well, okay, well, I said, send that child to me. That child needs to come and ask me personally, the big scary preacher, to be baptized. And to answer questions from me about why they should be baptized and what it means to be baptized and so on and so on. And so with my own children, I remember my son, I have a son who is a junior preacher boy, Bob Jones. He's always been a very aggressive child. My dad was about six or so. He was the kind of kid that would ask you and you'd say no, and then he'd come and ask you again and you'd say no, and he'd come and ask you again and you'd say no. And so he was, my dad was with him in a room. He says, Rory, he says, oh, I was not supposed to give out personal names. Anyway, Rory, he says, why do you keep asking your dad when he tells you no? And Rory's answer, very innocent, well, I think maybe he'll change his mind. So this kid is very aggressive. He wants to be baptized. He's 7 years old. I think he's the youngest one that I baptized, the one at that point that I baptized him. I wrestled with that. I mean, he certainly showed a very committed decision, but really, is he ready? So my point by saying that is, I consulted with other preachers, and we decided to go ahead and baptism, and he really has shined. He's really a blessing to us. But my point is, that when we're talking about the disciplined admonition of the Lord, I think that we make a mistake rushing forward too soon with little ones who are so wanting to please, and we want them to have a real grasp of the grace of God. The bottom line of my philosophy is this. We want their disciplined admonition to be truly of the Lord and not of self. It's not my discipline. It's not my admonition. It's not my disciplined admonition. It's the Lord's. And the same be true for you and for your families and for the ministries that you. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer.